Okay, so tonight is about clues for God. To sort of understand what the whole thing I'm talking about is, how many of you watch like crime dramas or, you know, like crime books or just law in general? Well, if you watch those shows, I love them. I kind of sort of live off of, like, you know, I want to say something like Ally McBeal, but I don't think that really counts as a good show, so, or a sort of current one. But the thing that's sort of obvious about these shows is that if they go to court for anything, whoever's sort of fighting a side, or if you know anything about our justice system, if with lack of sort of evidence, like obvious proof of somebody's guilt or innocence, they gather evidence. The more evidence that they gather, the better their case for the guilt or the innocence of the person that's at court. They fight and argue over the evidence that's given, depending on what side they're standing on. If they're for the guilt of the person, they will try and maybe use that evidence to prove their guilt. So if they're fighting for that, the person on the other side will try and use that evidence to show their innocence. But in the end, a judge and a set of jurors will decide on the weight of the evidence given. So the amount of evidence that is sort of put together will then say for how that evidence stands, whether they are guilty or innocent. This is something we rely on as a society. This is a very, you know, we take this as standard. The amount of evidence that's given will prove something, the guilt or the innocence of a person, or the amount of evidence will show if something is true or false. It's the same with our faith. We look for clues of whether God exists or not. And there is so many clues to God's existence that it's overwhelming. The evidence, if you were to set all the clues down in front of a jury, you would have to ask them, you know, what is it that sort of, you know, one by one, they could probably be discredited or rationalized or set aside. But as a whole, they really make for a good case. So this is what I'm looking at tonight. What I would like you to do just before we get started is in your, round your tables, is quickly, if you can think of anything, a clue that you would say, something that makes you think, specific to you. Susan mentioned creation in one of our songs as a sort of an evidence, a clue for God. Is there anything that you have in your mind that is a clue for you for God? A couple of minutes. To sort of share something? Do you want me to give you another second or two? Okay, so from your groups, the evidence or the clues that you were talking about, was there any there that you've never heard of before? Was it something, or was it something that you all generally agree on? Feedback would be nice. Pick on a group. yeah, I think we'll pick on John's group. Cool. That is awesome. Right, let's go for Rink's table. Can't hear, so I speak up please. Oh, just that the disciples were prepared to die for the message. Alright. I'm getting a maybe I didn't get that quite right. Okay, sorry, I didn't do it justice. And lastly this table here. I think I'm going to sit down and just let that table carry on because they've really got it really well here. Ooh, yeah, go team. That's awesome. It's really cool because it's nice. The paper, I kind of went off from the book. I ended up finding an article online which then sort of took me on to something else and then something else. And then I came back to the book and left the book and started looking at the philosopher that they sort of got a couple of their ideas from. And it's cool though because a lot of what yous are talking about is definitely, you know, it's nothing, sorry guys, but it's nothing new. You know, what you're talking about is definitely, you know, sort of the clues that are out there. So we're seeing them, we're noticing them. I want to go over quickly six of the clues and then concentrate on three. Quickly over six because over the last couple of weeks we've probably looked at these clues already, so I don't want to spend too much time, but I want to focus on three that really spoke to me, and just to share sort of what I was thinking about these ones. So the first one, okay, over egg. Oh well. I could just stay there just now. Is it going to work? Ah, right, we'll just carry on. If you can get it on to the next slide, then that'd be great. Right. No, okay. If you can get it on to the next slide at some point, then can you exit it and put it back up? Right, we'll carry on anyway. Well, that's really annoying because there's like a bunch of... I was relying on some slides for my point in a bit. Oh, well, we'll see how we can go. Get it working. Yeah. If you can even reset the computer, that would be awesome. So I'm getting a look at it. Just being like, really? Okay. Thanks, honey. Anyway. I'll just carry on while we're waiting for. Anyway, no pressure. Right. So anyway, the first clue, which we did look at in the series, was the existence of God in creations, in creation, the origin of the universe. We looked at things like the Big Bang and how that is generally accepted as the way that the Earth was created, but that there was a designer behind it. So whatever begins to exist has a cause. Yay! He's really going to earn his dinner when we get home tonight. So the whatever begins to exist has a cause. the universe began to exist, therefore the universe has a cause. That's sort of like the main thing about the idea that there was a designer behind it. There was, you know, God created it because there was, it gives purpose to it. Otherwise, you know, why, you know, the thing that David was saying was to just come from nothing. How is that possible? You know, it seems the chances of it, you know, the 6-6s rolling the dice sort of thing, the chances of that happening are so slim, you know, the idea of having it. So that we looked at the fact that this could be argued for and against, you know, it, on its own there's an argument to it, but, you know, putting it as part of the clues, that it looks quite sort of good for the fact that there was a designer behind the creation, the Big Bang. Because it just can't come out of nothing. Hey, excellent, this is all working good now. So clue two was the ample scientific evidence that we live in a fine-tuned universe. Again, David was talking about these millionth, you know, 10 to the millionth power thing that my brain just sort of went, nyah. But, you know, the fact that the universe is fine-tuned to infinitesimal amounts, and all these things align, and if any one of them was off, then it just wouldn't work the way that it works. You know, we would either explode or implode, or, you know, something that we wouldn't want to happen would happen. So this fine-tuned universe is a massive, important clue, because, again, this couldn't just happen randomly. It can be argued, you know, we talked about how it can be argued that, you know, there's the multiverse sort of theory that this is just by chance again. But again, as part of the clues, you know, it looks good to the fact that, you know, that there was purpose. God gave it purpose. God took a lot of thought about it in the design, so that these infinitesimal sort of fine-tuned moments, you know, like gravity and things like that, all came together because somebody put a bit of thought into it. Clue three, the order, the structure of the physical world. The idea that we should not take for granted that the universe is regular in its processes and functions. What I was reading in the article was that the regularity, the fact that something will do something time and time and time and time again in nature, I'm trying to remember how they worded it. It was struggling to sort of justify this. You know, that the fact that there was patterns that you could see in nature, there was a structure to it all, again, means that there had to have been thought put into the way that this was happening. Because, again, if it was all just by chance, the structure and the pattern and the regularity of it all just seems implausible. It seems unlikely. And the fact that we can perceive this seems, again, that there's somebody behind it all. Does that make sense? Excellent. So again, on its own, it's something that can be argued, it could be disproved, it could be debated over, but put together with the rest of it, you know, it works well as a clue, as an evidence. Clue four, morality, a longing for justice. I find it really interesting. There was a quote on Facebook, you know, the sort of the be-all and end-all of all your information, on Facebook, some little picture that had a quote on it, and I think it was from, like, a celebrity. I can't remember who. I want to say Sandra Bullock, but I don't even know if that's right. And it was saying something along the lines of, religion doesn't mean I can tell right from wrong without religion. I don't need religion to tell me what is right and wrong. You know, I've got a good internal moral compass. It was probably a bit more succinct than that, but that was sort of the basis of it. But the idea of having this morality, a longing for justice, if you're leaving that to your own devices, that could be different from me to Erin to David. You know, the things that you see as a moral justice, and again, we talked about this before, can be different from person to person. When I was in primary school, I was a thief, but I was a thief because I was bullied and I didn't want to get beaten up again. So I saw the moral justice in me stealing hubba bubba from Tesco's, you know, whereas they probably wouldn't have taken too kindly to it. You know, so it, from my moral justice at that point would have been very different from theirs. It's very sort of, you know, throwaway as that is. But it is that thing. So the idea of having God or our faith as our moral compass to point us to something. So as a group, if we're focused on God as our moral compass, there's something there that we're being drawn on by, we're being brought towards, so that we know right from wrong based on God's laws, based on God's morals, so we're not having to make up our own minds about it, and then there's a debate about what is right and wrong because your opinion differentiates from mine. So this longing for this moral, for this justice, and having that focused at God, allows us to have a union or a unity within that, and it gives us a purpose. So again, it can be debated. As I say, this post on Facebook said that, you know, they don't need religion to give them their moral compass. They can do that themselves. But then, you know, how can we agree on a justice system if we have nothing, you know, a common goal or a common thought or a common thread in that? So again, it's a really good clue that sort of draws in with the rest. So clue number five is a desire, a homing instinct for God. C.S. Lewis' argument for desire holds that every human desire has a corresponding object. So every human desire has a corresponding object. That we have a natural desire for transcendent fulfillment, which is unattainable in this world. Therefore, this fulfillment is only available in the world to come. So basically, what C.S. Lewis is saying is that you get hungry because you know you want food. You know, a baby doesn't know what food is, but it knows that it's hungry. So there's this homing instinct that it has for this need, for this requirement. So the same thing is for us. You can see it in songs. You know, a lot of people sing songs about heaven, about something bigger than them. You know, there's this sense of an otherworldliness. This idea that there's something bigger than us, something more than us, but they maybe can't put their finger on it because they don't know what it is. And it's something within us that we long to fill with things. The best thing, John keeps using the example of the wee man from the alpha thing with the middle out of him, and he's using everything to fill that. And it's only through a relationship with God that gap gets filled. So it's that sort of, it's that longing for something, that requirement, that desire for that corresponding object that we have. That again, and these desires could just be debated away or sort of put off as something else, or not even necessarily something to do with God. You know, it could be Mother Nature, or, you know, just oneness with yourself, or, you know, this whole thing. But there's still this thing there that there's something more to who we are. So this homing instinct for God, so we can identify that as something more than just, you know, a light-hearted desire for meditation, or I don't know, something like that. But if when we put a finger on it, it's this desire that our spirit, our inner being, wants to connect to God. So I know that was really, really quick, but I felt that we had covered most of them, but I didn't want to miss them for anybody that hadn't been here before, because I think they're relevant, they're really good clues, they're the big ones that probably get flagged up quite a lot for us. So is everybody happy enough with them? I don't want to sort of just kind of brush over them too fast without giving you a minute to think about them, or maybe even sort of ask a question. Is that all right? Yeah? Okay, cool. So for me, I'm going to go on now and talk about my biggest clues, and it was mentioned from Rink's table, the argument from beauty. This idea of nature, for me, the biggest clue that makes me have my faith is just this idea of the beauty around us. I remember when I was at uni, we would go to house group, and there was a guy who was a scientist, and he really, really struggled with his faith, because he needed much more reasoning, much more evidence, much more than just, you know, ooh, pretty tree, or, you know, something like that. Whereas for me, that, in my simplicity, I suppose I always say that it's the artist in me that just sees this breathtaking landscape. I was down, I was driving, I was either going to Gala Shields or coming back from Gala Shields, and this is just outside Innerleithen, and it's a gorgeous, gorgeous stretch of road. It's the back road as you go down. My dad first showed me it when I was learning to ride my motorbike. It's an amazing road to go down on your motorbike. But there's this little area here that you can just stop by, and it's phenomenal. You know, the other side's the golf course. And, you know, I would just, going down, I think it must have been when I was coming back from Gala, actually, because I would just have been teaching a class. And I found it so stressful because I was really thrown into the deep end, and I would love just coming to this bit and stopping and listening to the water, just the sunshine, you know, a chance just to really sit and just after a mad day. And I really felt so connected to God just at that spot, to stop for 15 minutes or, you know, an hour, whatever I felt like, just on my way home from work after teaching for the day at Gala down at the university. And I loved that. That really just spoke to me. I could just see God's hand in everything on that. This was a picture I took at the Botanical Gardens in Edinburgh. And I just loved the roots. You know, just something so simple in a tree. I loved the roots of it. And I just, the fact that they're all so thin, but that tree is massive. And one on its own, there is no way that could have held up that tree. But just them all together was just holding up this towering tree. And just the beauty of that. Who would have thought of that? You know, how can that just be random? I struggle to think that just happened by chance. You know, I think I maybe sort of stood for 20 minutes just staring at those roots, looking like a proper loon. But just the beauty within that, you know, really just touched me. This is my favourite place on earth. It's the Cove. As you drive down the A1, it's just past the Trinent Power Station. And if you pull in, you have to walk down the cliffside and through the cliffs. There's this really creepy tunnel, but as you come out the other side, there's this harbour, and these two like little houses, huts here, you can actually hire that one for holidays. And it's amazing. It's such a beautiful little place. There's so much history there. And I just love, I think anybody that I've ever had like coming to visit us, we always take them there, and it's so much fun, and it's so beautiful just to go and sit. And again, just being next to the sea, and really just somewhere that God just, I just feel that I can connect to God so easily. My mind just really just sort of snaps in and tuned to God. So I love it down at the Cove. It's amazing. So that's sort of like creation, landscapes. This is really, really unusual. This is Grangemouth. This is where I grew up. It's a really bad picture. But the thing is, Grangemouth, I don't know if you've ever seen the flare stacks in Grangemouth when they're really hitting high. But this, basically, the distance from me to that flare stack when I took that picture is probably the equivalent of me standing here to, I'm just trying to think, the shops up at Gilmerton. You know, it's not that far. So that's the height of that flare stack is enormous. The roar that comes off it, I can hear in my shop with the window shut. You know, it is huge. And I used to work in the BP as a cleaner, and I would walk underneath that flare stack when it was going, and the vibrations in your body as you walk underneath it is unbelievable. And it's like, you know, how... there's no way that you can sit there and be like, well, how does God speak to you in that? But it's just this amazing thing that somebody at some point was given this idea to burn off something that I think it, that I may be wrong on this, but something goes wrong within the chemical plant and they burn it off, I think. And this, or, you know, it's something along the lines of that. But this thing just roars, and I grew up next to this. But somebody at some point had this idea that that was a good idea. And I just think it's amazing, that just the inspiration that went into that. I just, it's so awesome. I'm just sitting as a kid in my bedroom, and this thing was illuminating. That was my nightlight. You know, it's amazing, just this itself. So it's not particularly pretty. It's really unhealthy for the environment, I know, but it just, to see it and to walk under it is amazing. This is something so random. I like random. I don't know what, I was at a junkyard and somebody put that up in the junkyard. I think it looks like a speaker. You know, sort of like the inner workings of a speaker. Now, I don't know if that's what they were doing, but just the fact that I can be inspired, I feel, as you may get from this theme, I feel art or stuff like that is just something that, you know, an appreciation of that is something that is God-given, you know, and that's just junk, and I see beauty in that junk. You know, that has to come from God, or I'm mental. Ick me, sort of go for the latter, I don't know. But I just see beauty in that. Somebody took the time to string that up, and I don't know what they were thinking, I don't know what they were doing. They might just have been bored, it might have just landed like that, I don't know. But I saw something really cool in that junkyard, and I was like, no, it looks like a speaker, click. You know, I just, somebody, so it, if even if somebody wasn't inspired by it, it's inspired me, you know. And I just, I love art. So the next thing, if you've ever been to the Portrait Gallery, the National Museum, the one at the Gardens, I can never remember the name of it. There's the two at the Gardens on Princes Street. The one behind it, you can get in it for free, so, you know, really worthwhile going for a look. But this painting, I've been round it a few times. I like wasting my time in this gallery. And I've never seen this guy's painting before. They don't really know who he is. But the thing that I love is the ruffles on his shirt. Just the detailing that's gone into that. To get up close to that painting, you should see the detailing in his eyes, the wisps in his hair. The detailing in it is better than a photograph. It's beautiful. And again, I stood in the gallery for I don't know how long, just breathless at this photograph. Just mesmerised by this unknown man's face. You know, for me, it's really just something that knocks my breath away. This is Moni's Water Lilies. I saw this in the Musée d'Orsay when I was at uni, and I honestly spent an hour in front of it just looking at it. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. I've never seen anything so beautiful in my whole life. It is gorgeous. I'm just going to move on. So the other thing that really sort of speaks to me is music. So I'm going to do something. I hope this works. I was in my shop during the week. Of course it's not going to work. No, it's not going to work. I was in my shop during the week. And I was just, I had a lot of stuff on and I wanted to pass a bit of time, and I put on Spotify and I put on Benny Goodman, who does big band music, and this is specifically from the 40s, and I had it on really loud. Is this going to work? All of a sudden this is just going to go, maybe not. But the thing that I found really funny was I was up the stairs working, and this guy walked into the shop, and he really didn't expect me to have this 1940s big band music playing really, really loud. And as he walked in, he was like, oh, what is that? And there was like saxophones and all this sort of stuff. And I was just like, sorry. Oh, there we go. I had this on so loud, it was unbelievable. And as Scott walked in, honestly, he was so shocked because he didn't expect me to have that on that loud. And I just think the music itself, but it's just, music is something that just really connects people. You know, people worship something that I absolutely love. I find it such an easy way to connect with God. Leaving Portobello this morning, as I was driving through, the song that got into my head was, I see your face in every sunrise, the colours of the morning are inside your eyes. You know, when you're talking about clues for God and beauty, you know, the lyrics in that song just sort of came to me, and it really just was, it was just nice to be driving and thinking of that specific thing, you know, that thing where you're thinking of the colours of the morning are inside your eyes. You know, you try to talk about how to describe God, and there's a beautiful sort of thing about, you know, I that painting of the portrait of the unknown man, I stood and looked at the detailing in his eyes for ages just because I was mesmerised by that painting. But to think about, you know, the colours of the morning are inside your eyes, to sit and think, you know, would I be the same if that was how I came face to face with an actual portrait of God? You know, so these things, these beauties, these things that really just take my breath away, that I've sort of maybe spent a bit too long sort of sharing with you, but it's the stuff that really just, that does knock my breath away, that sits, and I could lose an hour, you know, a couple hours at a portrait gallery, or, you know, in a junkyard taking pictures of junk, or, you know, just something that really just makes me appreciate this artist heart that God's gave me, you know, to see God in all these beautiful things. You know, for me, forget the rest of the clues, for me that's the thing that really, really comes home, and, you know, that I need to talk to you about, to sort of say this is my major clue. The other one, I've got two more. I know that I don't want to go on too long, but there's two more clues that I just want to quickly talk about. The argument for references. What's that? A tree. Good. I thought somebody was going to be like, it's an oak, or, you know, a sycamore, and I was just like, no, we want tree. We know that that's a tree. We've been given a reference for it. We've been given a word. We know the name of it. So this argument for reference, if there was no trees, would we have the word tree? Would it be assigned to this? No, because that's a chair. You know, if there are no trees, there would be no word for tree. So the argument for reference is, we know the name of God. We know the many names of God. If there was no God, would we have those names? I just really like this idea that we know the names of God, all the names of God. You know, we've done a whole series on it. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is, so there's Rohi, all these other words. You know, we know the names, the many names of God that describe him. If there was no God, would we have these names? What would be the point of these names? So having a reference, a frame of reference to the names of God. I don't want to sort of overthink these ones, because I love the simplicity of them, which then brings me to the argument from simplicity. I really like this quote from Einstein. Everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler. All of these things that we're looking at, I really want you to focus on the fact that a simple faith is a really good evidence for God. I know we're looking at all these big, big things, these big thoughts. If you want to see all of the reasons, the clues that Alvin Pantinga put together for the clues for God, it's it's interesting reading. It's quite heavy reading, but just don't overcomplicate it. The simplicity, the evidence of the simplicity of your faith is a really, really strong evidence for God. And it's the thing that I don't want to, when I was thinking about this, I don't want to overcomplicate my faith. I love the fact that my faith is based on the beauty. You know, it's the one thing that I've always held so closely to my heart, is just I can see the beauty of God in his creation, in a painting, in a song. The simplicity of that really means a lot to me. Somebody could argue that the simplicity of my faith is wrong. You know, they could argue all they want with me that there is no God. I don't care. The simplicity of my faith is the fact that I believe in God. Take that away from me. You know, try it. You know, argue it with me all you want. It doesn't really matter to me. So I really wanted to focus on this last argument for simplicity. Don't worry about the complexities of all of this stuff that we're looking at. Because the simplicity of the fact that God loves you and that he sent his son to die for you so that you could be with him for eternity, I think is a really, really, really lovely, simple thought to hold on to. And if you believe that, don't let anybody take that away from you by arguing these bigger concepts. Because they can argue every single one of them for an infinite amount of time. They can give you all this evidence for cases against all of these things that I've talked about. But the simplicity of your faith is something that holds true to you and to me. I know it in my heart. I can't prove that to anybody. You know, my relationship with God is so personal. And that's the thing that I need to hold on to. This personal knowledge of this personal relationship with God, the simplicity of that could be argued all they want. There's nothing they can do about it. They can't take that away from me. I really want to start singing Fred Astaire now. But you know, it's the simplicity of that knowledge, that belief. We even sang it ourselves tonight. The last song that we done, Jesus loves me, this I know for sure. Oh, how he loves me, this I know for sure. All of you sang it, as far as I'm aware. The simplicity of the knowledge of that, I think, is evidence enough for the case for God. And if it came down to a judge and a jury, the amount of people in this room that sang that, I think, would weigh heavily on the fact that that's a really, really good clue. And enough, all of you individually singing that one simple truth, that one simple statement, is a really good thing. You know, it would weigh heavily on the for side for God, for a judge and a jury. So I want to just leave it there. We're going to sing a song now, the one that I've had buzzing around my head today. So I would really like us to sing that, and then we'll close with a prayer.